Are dents and scratches putting a dent in your day? Introducing Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide, your trusted solution for automotive woes. With over two decades of expertise, Roger Steen Crash Repairs guarantees top-notch service, restoring your vehicle to its former glory in no time. From minor dings to major collisions, our skilled technicians handle it all with precision and care, using state-of-the-art equipment and techniques.
Roger Steen Crash Repairs saved my car. It looks brand new.
Fast, friendly and reliable. I wouldn't trust anyone else with my vehicle. Don't let accidents slow you down. Visit Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide at 14 Penner Avenue, Glynde, for quality service you can count on. And here's a special offer just for our listeners. Mention this podcast and receive a $100 discount on your repair. Roger Steen Crash Repairs Adelaide. Excellence in every repair.
Sportscast SA presents Game On. Game On. South Australia's destination for everything sports. Local, national and international sports. AFL football, soccer, basketball, golf, baseball, tennis, cricket, and any other sports played in this wide world. And we're going to have a blast doing it. So sit back, relax, and let's do this thing. Welcome to Game On.
Welcome to Game On. My name's Pete, joined with Malcolm once again, and we're going to do a bit of an AFL-only podcast here. We're going to release a couple of days earlier. Our normal episode is going to be up Saturday morning, but we thought we'd dedicate this episode right now to the AFL and its opening round and round one sort of combined. So let's get straight into it, mate. Your thoughts on opening round, good, the bad, the ugly on it?
The good, I think finally, there was actually a decision made, which was for the overall national competition instead of the extended VFL competition, which is still what it really is. Mm-hmm. I had no problem at all with four games up there, and there were very good-sized crowds. The rugby was in America. Yep. Why not have a crack?
Yep.
Trying to get some of that northern market? All for that. For me, the bad part, and it's just insane, those eight teams who played last week, if they're playing this week, should have all been playing each other. Like Richmond are playing Carlton. That's what should have happened. Mm-hmm. I don't mind if Gold Coast play Brisbane this week or whatever. But for Gold Coast to play their second game, it's at home in that in the weather, which should be, and it is an advantage, so it should be, against a team who hasn't played, I think it's a massive free kick. Okay, it happens to be Adelaide. But I'd be saying that if it was poor, anyone. I don't care. I think that is the really poor part of it. And I can't believe that the other clubs didn't unite to let it go through. Instead of going, right, yep, okay, have that northern market, but they all must play each other next week. So whether that means Melbourne played Brisbane this week, whatever, but those eight teams had to play each other.
Yep.
For mine, that it's just unforgivable and incompetent. You know, I'm as red hot on it as that. As I said, I very rarely bet on footy. I'll be having a bet on Gold Coast this week. I reckon they're a really good thing.
Well, I think they're a good thing for a number of reasons.
For that advantage.
It's not a bad point you bring up, actually, that I hadn't actually thought about it from the point of view. I know that, you know, obviously teams that.
Well, it's always had the comment is made that you play your first game and that first real game, that it doesn't matter how much pre-season you've done, you're blowing. The players are blowing. Well, they're going to have that advantage. They're not going to be against the others. I just think it's huge.
Yep. You brought up, obviously, the teams that did play last week should be playing against each other this week. I can't disagree with anything you said there. Massive free kick. And I suppose it's almost the, the second prize to the gather round for the Northern States. If you look at it from that point of view,
that's the way it sort of comes across a bit.
It does. You also get the advantage, as we've talked about before, in that rugby had obviously gone offshore, so there was an opening there, and full credit to the AFL and jumping on top of that. So I think that is a big tick from there. 10 years ago, would you have ever thought that we would be getting sold out crowds to games up in New South Wales and Queensland? Probably not.
No, no. And let's also remember that Brisbane and the Gold Coast in particular is the fastest junior growing part of Australian rules footy. So that's a massive tick.
I did hear a little statement, I think it was from Koshy, I believe, talking about how there will be more juniors playing in Queensland or participating in junior programs this year than there will be in South Australia. So,
yeah,
but you've also got to preface that with per head of population too.
A little bit, but let's also cover that and be going blatantly honest. Let's just say part of the metrics and the being careful here, the potentially and
yes.
allegedly,
yep.
that magnificent word, of an AFL bonus is on numbers in Queensland yep. in that particular. Well, if someone turns up and there's kids in the park and the parents are encouraged to sign the form, yeah, let's just say the numbers might be a little bit
inflated.
Questionable.
Yep.
Yeah, cool. Let's leave it at that.
But you've got to also look at per head of population.
Yes.
You've got to go, you know what? The AFL, almost like what they did with West Coast and then Adelaide and then Port Adelaide and Frio in bailing them out a little bit, is that this is where the new market is going, is that you need to tap into per head of population type states like a Queensland and a New South Wales, where you do have unlimited potential.
And also it showed in the draft last year, the number of Queenslanders in that, and geez, I've gone on about it. We haven't seen him yet.
Mm-hmm.
The Gold Coast Academy quartet, Jesus and mobility in that. And, yeah, so in that way, yes, it is. So people who keep saying, oh, no, it's ridiculous, it's a failure in Greater Western Sydney and Gold Coast, don't see the overall
yep.
picture.
I think we've got to look long-term with those yeah. things. A bit like, and I think we did touch on this a little bit last week or the week before, in that Sydney, you know, South Melbourne going up to Sydney was disaster initially, and then now look at them, they are powerhouses.
Exactly. Now people now there's only the deep seated South Melbourne supporters still think of it as a bit of South Melbourne, mm-hmm. and when they come back, and if Sydney are in finals, the red and white, the Bloods, and mm-hmm. that side of things. But it's Sydney. Now I'm still saying the same thing would have happened, and it should have been a relocated side to Gold Coast and GWS
yep.
and Tasmania and less sides in Victoria. That's what should have happened, but you were never going to get that through
mm-hmm.
The football landscape. But
yep.
I'm still saying that's
well,
what should have happened.
At the time, the current state was yeah. exactly like that. Anything that can be improved for opening round next year? You've obviously mentioned that the teams that do play each other yeah, that, should play each
main,
other. That's your big one?
That's my main one, yep.
Did you like the concept that it's given us a little bit of a tease, a little bit of a taste?
Look, I'd still like to see everyone play. I can't deny that, but I still understand exactly why it happened. And if rugby's going again to America next year, which sounds like they definitely will be.
Capitalise.
It makes sense.
All right, let's talk about those games very, very briefly. Obviously, Sydney and Melbourne kicked us off on Thursday night. Bit of a dour contest there for three quarters, but Sydney really choked Melbourne.
Apparently, the weather was just so humid. And if there's anything which affects football, it's players sweating like anything and the ball becoming like a cake of soap. And so it's effectively like playing in pissing down with rain,
yep.
but even harder. And yeah, a couple of mates at the game said it was just incredibly human, exactly that. And then Sydney and Grundy got right on top.
Well, yes, I was going to mention that.
Yep, the recruit of the year for mine.
Yeah,
and he got on top and beat Gorn overall, and that was vital.
Oh, absolutely. As I said, Sydney sort of strangling. And
yeah.
this is the thing about Sydney, is that you know what Sydney is going to bring. You know that that's their style of play. There's no point in complaining about it. There's no point in sort of going on about
it.
I don't have a problem with it either. I just think that they absolutely strangled Melbourne and took their strengths away from them. And in the end, kicking away to a 22-point victory there in the final quarter. But you mentioned Grundy was big.
And it was convincing in the end.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And look, Grundy was fantastic.
He and that new rule with the ruck took Gorn's run and jump out of it,
yeah.
and you really saw that ruck craft, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Like his ruck craft
was too good for
Gawn. Was fantastic. Yep. Yeah, yep. Totally agree. Where do we see Melbourne at the moment? We've talked about it.
Question marks.
Yeah, we've talked about it.
Massive question marks. Like Oliver was okay. Got a fair bit of the ball, but probably didn't really do that much of it. You're still wondering, would there be players also on the outside being a bit dark that he got brought back into the fold and got picked? The word was that it wasn't going to happen. Brayshaw getting injured changed that dynamics, which, again, is very questionable. Mm-hmm. Like, Tom Harley was – Tom Harley, they made the point that Geelong at the start of 2007 were struggling, and they were actually asked to shorten Steve Johnson's suspension. And Harley said, well, no, that's what we've decided. This is for the long term, for the good of Geelong Footy Club.
Yes.
We've got to do that. And so your question with Melbourne have done here, it's interesting. Like they rely so much on Fritz up forward. Yeah, there's big question marks there. No doubt about it.
I think we sort of got a little bit of an answer to what we sort of thought during the preseason in that, everything bar the kitchen sink's been thrown at them in the preseason. They just looked a bit off their game and Sydney obviously took full advantage of that. But you're right, there's just things that are not adding up there and it could derail their 2024 season. I still think they're good enough to play good football, but...
But it's question mark.
There is that question mark. Totally.
I think they did miss... Pickett got suspended out from his stupidity in last year's final, which, let's be honest, that played a big part in Melbourne getting knocked out as well.
Yep.
So they really missed him, and I think they really missed his pressure, which is even more important, that dynamic, keep it in the area, small forward, and kick a couple of goals. Missed him big time.
Here's a question without notice. Do you think Melbourne are feeling the pinch a little bit or the pressure a little bit in not achieving what they probably should be achieving, considering that they look like they've got all the talent?
Well, definitely potentially, because let's be honest, with the way they finished when they went top, that last quarter and a half against the Western Bulldogs is the best football any of us have ever seen.
Oh, absolutely.
And just you went out of that going, shit, how's anyone going to compete with this?
This is the new standard, yep.
And then they win the first 10 games the following year and we're thinking,
Who's going to challenge them in the finals?
Good luck. And then they've really...
fallen away.
Been very average ever since.
It's going to be an interesting watch, Melbourne. Like we said, that little bit of pressure just builds and builds and builds and then a couple of things don't quite go their way. Couple of outside influences and all of a sudden it can implode very, very quickly. And we've seen that before with a lot of AFL teams. This is nothing new. It's an amazing, amazing thing. And it just shows you that a lot of it's played between the ears. All right, mate, we'll move on to the next game, which was Brisbane and Carlton. What an unbelievable game. I mean, from a Carlton supporter, from my point of view, 46 points down, I am flipping channels going, I don't think I can watch this car wreck starting to happen. And then flip back and go, well, they're just edging away. And the thing that they had in their favour was time. They had plenty of time.
Look, I felt Brisbane really choked. That was the other thing. Yeah, they missed some really easy goals, but some of their structures and ball movement just fell apart completely and some players panicked. It was a surprise and a big game for them this week against Freo over there. If you're starting 0-2, can add up. And, and you think Carlton without Wietering and Walsh, you thought, they should get...
Maybe.
And I thought even at three-quarter time, right, Brisbane have steadied now, they got on top, etc. And yet, no, they really... And it became a bit... Yeah, Carlton probably got a couple of lucky decisions in that way, but I thought overall Brisbane blew it big time.
How good was Charlie Kerno? Stepped up at just the right moment. Played some big moments, but for me, the biggest moment, and yes, all right, it was sort of the game winner at the end of the day, was McKay kicking that goal, but as a drop punt.
Yes.
Not around the corner.
Not around the corner crap.
Yes.
Also, where in that set bit of play, Carlton set up brilliantly, and I thought Brisbane really broke down and panicked. They kicked long for McGovern to take the intercept mark when it had to be a chip out wide.
Yes.
And... Yeah, McGovern, the central kick, then the kick to McKay. And question marks on Harris Andrews. Very good as a plus one, but you know, like there was always the question mark on Alex Rance about actually having to stand someone and beat the player defensively. He's not great defensively.
No.
Like Alex Rance wasn't great defensively.
It's going to be an interesting watch, Brisbane, because I think that they're another team a bit like Melbourne who feel like they should have done a lot more than what they have done. Now the pressure really does come, for the Brisbane Lions. All right.
They play Freo away this week, and then I haven't got it in front of us who they play round three, but I know it's a hard one again. So it's, interesting.
It is. We'll move on quickly. We'll circle back to that to see who they do play. The Suns and Richmond, impressive, the Suns at the moment. Yes, they have had the free kick of obviously playing at home. Hardwick, he's got all the nice, bright, new, shiny tools, but Matty Rao is
Wow. More clearances, centre clearances than Richmond combined. He was the player of the opening round. He was the one, like 20 clearances. He's just the bull, and that's the first preseason he's done. He's always been injured.
Yep.
So you hit that with Rao, Anderson, and Miller. That's as good as anyone. You know, that competes with the dynamic three from Port, and if anything, is better balanced.
Yep.
Because of Rao so strong inside, and then Anderson and Miller on the outside. Adelaide haven't got anyone who could remotely complete with Rao.
That was one of my big questions for you, was that Adelaide have really got to watch this. I mean, I know they would have done their homework, but who do they put on him? Yeah. And I just don't know.
No, there's not. There's no. Look, Keys or Berry just don't compete with him physically, and I can just see Rao just dominating again this week.
Is it a case of someone like a Matty Crouch gets given a job and says, you know what, just go with him, stick with him?
I just think he's too strong in the core, in and under that strong base core to get away.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't see anyone competing with him. He may well, look, at the moment, before the start of this year, you probably have a case for him before the start of the year to probably, you know, top 30-ish mark. I'd say before the end of the year, like Butters last year, came the big bang and came in everyone's top five, Rao will do the same.
I think we forget that Rao has been in the AFL system for 3 or 4 years now. Obviously, injury has played a little bit of a part, but he gets it right, wow.
He did get – I know, again, I still pay far more importance on club votes and coaches' awards than Brownlow, but he did get the 9 votes in his first 3 games, and – there's no one in the world he didn't start with 3 on the weekend.
Exactly right. 20-odd clearances and second AFL record. But, Gold Coast getting up over Richmond by 39 points. Where does that leave Richmond at the moment? They're in transition at the moment.
Yeah, they are. And, look, it's amusing where every club supporters think the media is against them. They think someone in the media hates them and all that. What Kane Corn said was spot on. It was just, I think that what they've given up for Taranto and Hopper, if they've tried to extend their window.
Yes.
Now, we're only going to see in the end whether that was, like, we've seen that it wasn't a diabolical decision by West Coast with what they paid to get Kelly and how that's gone skew with.
Yep.
It can do the same with Richmond with Taranto and Hopper. And for all the bit of Taranto, yes, he did win Richmond's best and fairest, but Kane Cord's made the point last year he's an average kick, and he is an average kick. There's question marks here. Okay, Martin didn't play.
Lynch didn't play,
But Lynch has missed a lot of footy. You can't expect him to hit the ground running.
Yep.
Nankervis is a warrior, good competitor. Naismith was probably a little bit disappointing. And so he gets him for his first game, gets dropped again immediately. I'll be very surprised if Carlton don't win tonight. You've got to tip Carlton.
Yes.
And, I think Richmond are in transition. Look, if Martin just suddenly puts on a clinic, well, there are a huge chance.
Exactly. But you can't rely on one player. That's the thing. The reason why I ask whether you think, we both think that Richmond's in transition is really – They've got that balance of their premiership players or premiership year players that did play throughout that time. They've obviously had players that have obviously retired and moved on from then. Where do they get to round 10, and if things aren't quite going that way, do they cut a little bit harder like most? Because the only teams that have done very, very well in topping up in their premiership windows has been Geelong and probably Hawthorn to a certain degree. With their success over a great number of years, which is what Richmond were at. They've almost followed that and hasn't quite worked out for them.
To question Grimes playing on, and to say he was terrible last week's probably an understatement. Whether he lasts the season, like we remember Tyson Edwards struggled for Adelaide, got told he wasn't going to be picked, and then that changed and he got a farewell game and he was best on ground. And then you thought, well, should he keep going? But, but out of that,
but reality,
to and fro, but reality, I think Grimes is playing on borrowed time. If he has another stinker tonight, it'll be interesting.
Yep, absolutely. And the last game of our opening round was GWS v Collingwood. GWS were impressive.
Yeah, very impressive.
And I have to say, they are the real deal.
As we said briefly last week and the last couple, that they probably bat deeper than any other side. I think the bit that they go down, you know, their 17 to 26 selection is probably better than most 10 to 15 selection.
Yep.
Brown, look, he's still got to wear last year's prelim final where he did not go hard enough at time in the third quarter. Again, I'm showing my age. Mm-hmm. I'm still really hard on that. When it's your turn to go, you've got to go.
Yep, head in the hole. Yep.
You get examined that way. He failed that in last year's prelim final, but geez, he's got some ability. Him, Toby Green. Hogan seems to be reborn.
Yep.
And that Riccardi up there. Cadman looked that last year's number one selection.
Yes.
Just looked that bit more growing into and a little bit more confidence that he is good enough. And as we know how much the sport's played above the ears. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they look very, very, very good.
Is it a case of that out of sight, out of mind with GWS? I mean, really, last year we weren't expecting them to do what they've done. They've done that, and now they look like they've improved that 2%, 3%, 4%, 5% that you want.
Well,
that makes them even more formidable.
Each time players have left, they've swapped for high draft choices. Now, there's not the speculative. If you go back and you get a draft book out, you know, the Richard Lowndes going up one and Anthony Bannick and things like that.
Yep.
That doesn't happen nowadays. There's far more research, far more, just professionalism about it. It's not the throw a dartboard at it anymore.
It's more scientific than ever.
Yeah. So they've swapped them over. So they've just kept topping up. So they've probably got the most ability on their list.
Yep.
And I think they showed that last week.
Scary prospect, really, when you think about it. All right, let's talk about Collingwood, mate. The obvious question is, is Collingwood in a little bit of a hangover, or was it a case of first game out, you've got an opposition that obviously lost to them into the finals?
And an opposition who are very, very good.
Yep.
I'm not right, you know, out of there. But the fact that McStay doing it, being out for the year, so they rely on Mychek is their key forward, as an undersized key forward.
Yep.
So they've probably always lacked in that. So they've relied on Bobby Hill and then the things that, and had such an exceptional leader in Pendlebury to go there. And Pendlebury's last quarter in the grand final was as influential as anyone.
Yes.
It's still only round one. Out of that. So there's a lot of things there that maybe we're jumping the gum a little bit.
I'm not writing Collingwood off anything.
Oh, shit, no. But I just think also my bit out of what last week was, I kept going, well, I think they're playing the team to beat. So, yeah.
Yep. Fair, cool. My takeaway was that the hunger is real. GWS obviously just missing out last year to Collingwood. They get their opportunity first up to make a statement. They make their statement. Collingwood were unusually very loose in the back lines, which has been pointed out time and time again all through the week here, obviously through all of the various shows that are talking about how that very uncharacteristic. And it's probably the first time you've seen McRae flustered on the boundary line, which I think GWS are going to be a team that flusters a lot of people this year.
Yeah, and look, also, let's also be honest. The umpiring in that prelim final, to say Collingwood got the better end of it, yet again, Laura Kane struggled as soon as she had to speak. You know, for mine, she's caught Marsh Bowl Lily most times she's spoken.
Nah, so I've got to pull you up on that. I seen her on she was the better, footy show last night. I thought she was impressive. But I do think that there are things that she will get better at as she's sort of growing into the job. So mine's a bit of a wait and see on that one, a little bit. But anyway, we're allowed to differ.
Discreet.
Absolutely. Yep, all right, mate. I know that we've got a few things on our list to still go, but let's take a very, very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk, obviously, the Brayshaw incident. Players, obviously, you know, getting very precious about venues that they're playing at, and Adelaide's round one and Port Adelaide's round one makeup. So let's take a very, very quick break. We'll come back.
Hi, I'm Rachel Spawn, and you're listening to the Game On podcast.
All right, mate, we continue with Brayshaw retirement, obviously something that happened obviously a few weeks ago, but I think it's very, very important that we talk about it now, and that the fact that he's actually got 5 years to run on his contract and is now going to be a little bit of a test case for the AFL in how they handle it when a medical board or a medical panel sort of retires a player when they need to be retired.
Yeah, look, and as we know, it won't be the first, you know, like, it'd be interesting, so how far does that become retrospective? Someone like Pickin, let's wait and see on Murphy, whether Murphy then comes into the same same boat from Collingwood there. Hearing it, how complex it is, and that this will drag on for probably the majority, if not all of the year, trying to work out how the payment side of things is worked out, what's included in the cap, what's not. That Melbourne have got a great case for none of it to be included.
Yes.
That, hang on, he's been required by medical bit.
Yep.
You've made the decision, even though I still disagree with it, but you've made the decision that your rules weren't correct and that so change them for Maynard.
Yes.
I still think it's a bit like the sliding rule, a panic by the AFL.
They did jump at shadows, I agree.
Yeah, for something which for mine was still just a blatant footy accident.
Yep.
It's going to be very interesting to see.
You can't legislate on accidents, unfortunately, and that's the way it goes.
Yeah, crazy.
It's a tragic situation that a player has to retire, obviously, from the game that he loves playing via a medical board. But at the end of the day, players are getting much, much more education and are quite self-aware that, you know, that football isn't everything these days. And I think this is – it's a good and a bad thing, but – you're right. I believe that it probably shouldn't be included in the salary cap, but we'll see how that one plays out. Something that was interesting, are players getting precious about where what venues they play at because of the opening round fixture and also because they're the reigning premiers?
Yeah, I just think precious. Yeah, hang on. Geez, Collingwood, you play 18 games at home and a ridiculous amount at the G. It's such a huge advantage compared to playing an interstate team in a final and a grand final. How a Victorian team, especially Collingwood or Richmond, are complaining in that regard is unbelievable.
I have to agree. You have to think about the wider game as a whole. Collingwood travel very, very well. I don't know why you wouldn't go, you know what, we'll do our bit considering we do have 18 games at home.
Yeah.
I think that's why I probably put it in there as precious on the basis that you do get 18 games at home. Really, there's not much to complain about. I mean, if some of the interstate clubs had 18 games at home, it'd be a totally different scenario. All right, let's move on. Will Tasmania actually happen? There's a lot of moving parts here and they're not lining up at the moment.
I think it's 50-50 at the moment. I don't think it's 60-40 or 70-30. I think it's actually 50-50 and heading the other way at the moment. So
that's my worry as well with it.
Let's wait and see.
We'll talk about that one a little bit later on.
Things happening behind the scenes.
Yes.
We do have a political contact, and I'm not talking about Peter Malinauskas.
Nope.
A Tasmanian contact there that I don't think will be able to comment publicly, but I might chase him up off the side.
Yeah, fair call. My last sort of question before we get on to the Adelaide and Port Adelaide teams is, are we putting too much pressure on the young recruits? Should the draft age be raised?
I've always felt that.
Yep.
I think it's ridiculous that you're doing year 12, which everyone recognises the key year for you know, you might get into uni, all that sort of thing, and yet you're doing competing with that being your draft year. I've always said it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, of course, there's the odd person like Tim Watson debuted at 15
yep.
and you know, all that side of things. But for the side, and considering we're getting better as blokes admitting mental health struggles, it's a huge thing.
Yep.
You know, speaking to, you know, parents of players last year, you know, worried about what their son with studies yep. with it at the time. Yeah. Yeah. I get it on footy wise that there's the odd person.
Yes.
You know, like a James Age playing for Nord at 15 as well.
Yep.
There's the odd player that, yeah, you could say it's unfair that they missed league footy, but I'm saying for their overall good and that, yes, I'd have draft year raised.
At least a year.
Yeah.
At least a year.
Yep.
Hence the reason why I put it on the run sheet, mate, and AFL-only podcast today. Let's take a very, very quick break. Once again, we're going to come back with our Adelaide and Port Adelaide teams.
You're listening to the Game On Podcast. We'll be right back after this short break.
All right. Would you like to kick off with Port Adelaide or Adelaide, mate? I'll leave it up to you.
Well, we'll go with Adelaide.
Okay, let's go with
my
Adelaide.
My understanding is it's only Burgess playing.
Yes.
He's been advised, you know, so the parent with the video, that didn't get done with Curtin.
Yep.
So I think we can safely assume that Curtin won't be playing than Burgess is. I think their program's a real worry in terms of Gold Coast. Good luck.
We'll talk about that in a minute in their first four games, but who else do you see coming into that Adelaide lineup? We do know that obviously Taylor Walker is obviously withdrawn in the last 24 hours.
Phil Thorpe being out.
Yep.
There's still debate. I haven't got it ratified where some people are saying that Gallant got suspended in last year's Sandful prelim, but that got overturned. I'm still a bit up in the air on that and haven't uh-huh. been able to work that one out
yep.
completely. I think we're going to know a lot more at 6 o'clock tonight when the yep. team comes out.
Is there any surprises apart from Burgess that you can see popping up?
Sam Berry, you know, who was sort of the forgotten person and
yes.
drifted away a bit last year, that I think he may be back in the fold. Yep. I think that's probably the main one.
Fair call. I think I'm in the same boat as you in that I sort of assumed that Burgess would get the call up with Walker and Thilthorpe going down for this week anyway for Walker. But I also think that he's very versatile as well. And, you know, it's something that Adelaide could look at long term over the year. And look, it is a marathon, not a sprint. So,
oh, yeah. I can see Burgess playing down back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. I think initially that may have been where he would have been playing if Walker was playing and Thilthorpe was playing. So, anyway, obviously the big recruits for Adelaide were Burgess, Curtin, and Gallagher. Three interesting players there. You've obviously picked up Burgess from the Gold Coast, Curtin, obviously your number one draft pick, and Gallagher being a category B, I think, recruit from Ireland. Interesting that they're obviously still on the build, Adelaide, as we've talked about, but expectations are starting to rise, and I think they need to get it right.
Yeah, I still think there's too many honest battlers. I well and truly make the point. I don't understand in your leadership group that you've got Rob O'Brien and Lockie Murphy there.
Mm-hmm.
Adelaide are trying to compete for a spot in the eight, aren't really still planning to try and win a flag. I want them to set their expectations higher than what they are. That's my own opinion.
No, and that's fair enough too, because I think realistically, the fans have, you know, endured for the last 4 or 5 years going, all right, we know what the plan is. This is the plan. We're getting there slowly. Like anything, we'd all like to get there a lot faster, but they do need to start making some very smart list choices in the next 18 months to allow them to compete for a premiership, not for a top eight spot. I totally agree. Who are your big improvers for Adelaide this year? Who do you see making that next step?
Hitting the ground, I thought a guy who showed a lot last year and Adelaide really missed him when he got injured at the end of the year was Jones.
Yes.
I think he's...
You stole my thunder there because, yep.
He can play and he's versatile. I'd like to see him back on the wing. I'd like Scholl to be used. I still think there's a spot for his run and carry.
Yep. You're pinching my notes here, mate. You're not even looking at them.
No,
they're the two that I had on there as well.
Yeah. They need Rochelle to make a step to go from being the kid with promise to a genuine A-grader, All-Australian candidate. They need that to happen.
And all reports are, and again, you've basically taken a name off of my list as well, in that he's hit the ground running as far as he is leaving no stone unturned. Yeah. In his ability to impact in this year and obviously years going forward.
And my other one is Soligo.
Bugger me, you've almost nailed my entire list. I've got Jones, Rochelle, McHenry and Soligo.
Yeah.
They were pretty much my four that I could see big improvements coming with a little bit of game time. All right, you almost alluded...
Well, out of that, I would play McHenry every day of the week before Lockie Murphy's.
Yep.
And that's where I'm angry over their leadership selections.
Adelaide had something on their Facebook website, whatever it was, about picking their round one team for a couple of game membership or whatever, a bit of fun and games.
Yeah.
I actually sat down and did it last night. I left, I put in McHenry and took out Murphy.
Yeah, I would.
And I ummed and ahed for a good 15 or 20 minutes on Riley O'Brien and Strawn in that, you want to sort of put your best foot forward, obviously, in the early rounds, but I think Strawn's going to be very important to Adelaide as the year goes on. That's just my opinion anyway. Adelaide's first 4 weeks. Let's have a little bit of a look ahead. Let's crystal ball it a little bit. Obviously playing Gold Coast this weekend, Geelong, Fremantle and Melbourne. It's not the worst start, but it's not the easiest start either.
I think, too, that the realism at the moment is, look, I still think 16 teams can make the finals. Look, while I don't think Richmond will and Hawthorne are probably the two out of that, where you've got Gold Coast and North Melbourne. West Coast and North Melbourne. Like, you'd be stunned if either of those two improved so much to concede. So I'm saying it probably out of those 12, but you still wouldn't be surprised if Richmond made the eight and all that. So I think it's that even. So it's so hard to tell. Geelong, they missed Selwood last year.
Yes.
Far bigger than we all realised. Didn't make the eight.
Yep.
But do they suddenly have the advantage this year for the first time they've been able to do a pre-season, not be behind the eight ball because you've competed through? So all of a sudden that changes them up a little bit.
Yep.
Does a danger field hit the ground running and just dominate like Rao did?
Mm-hmm.
Is he still capable of that? So there's questions there.
Do they play him in the middle or up forward?
Yeah. So there's question marks there. But you could still easily see Geelong beating Adelaide next week. You're going to see Adelaide beating Geelong.
Correct.
So, I think that's a real 50-50 game.
And then you got Frio.
Frio over there.
You don't know where they're at the moment.
No, and, out of that.
I think they're good ruckman or they're...
Yeah, Darcy's injured.
He's injured, so now...
Does Luke Jackson go on ball and does he announce that, hey, I am a big deal as well? And then you play the team on the nose, potentially on the nose, or have Petrarca and Oliver made up and Gorn still dominate. So,
they're on a
question
roll.
Question mark, question mark.
As I said, Adelaide's first 4 weeks is fascinating for me because it could go either way and... Yeah, very, very interesting. Just a question without notice on Adelaide. They haven't signed Matty Nix yet. Do you see that being an issue or is this just a case of they're waiting like everything in the AFL? It is all orchestrated to be on this week at this time and so on and so on, and they're just waiting to do that.
Look, they probably are, but I just don't see the big need for it. Look, let's be honest, no other team's desperately trying to sign him. It's not like you're fighting for his signature. I think it's jumping the gun, but as we know, the way the AFL world is orchestrated, you can bet there'll be a press conference in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and this is what I'm saying, is that I think that it's done and dusted.
Yeah,
They're just going, you know what, there's the Google calendar. We're going to put it in at this time, at this date, on this week of the season.
And if we've lost there, we might change it to there.
Yes,
It's all bullshit.
The marketing manager's going completely nuts. All right, let's move on to Port Adelaide very, very quickly. Their round one makeup, obviously their obvious... big recruits. Let's talk about them first before we pick their team in Zerk, Thatcher, Radigalia, Sweet and Soldo. I probably see three out of the four they're playing.
Yeah, they will.
To be honest with you.
I think Sweet misses out first up. I think they will go with Soldo, it sounds like.
Yes.
So there's that. And they've got the bye for the fair. They've got the bye this week. So,
you're being a little bit unkind to West Coast because, they've got a few players back and Simpson looks like he's got a little bit of a spring in his step, but... he's starting from a long way back, like North Melbourne, like Hawthorn have done over the last couple of years. But you're right, it's going to be a good test for them first up, in that Port Adelaide need to keep their eye on the job, really, and get it done, and get it done very, very well to set an expectation for the season.
Yeah, they potentially do hit it running. Then Richmond, okay, it's there, but Richmond could be coming off naught too and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Melbourne, as we know, we've spoken enough there, and then Essendon are really iffy.
Yeah.
They could hit the ground running as well, Port.
This is the first 4 weeks for Port Adelaide we're obviously talking about, and if all goes well, technically Adelaide could actually win all four, and Port could actually win all four, so... But I see Port being in a little bit better position to probably be 4-0 or 3-1 at this stage.
Very much so.
Essendon are a bit of an unknown for me as well. Yeah. New players, obviously, in their makeup. We've obviously said Soldo, Radigalia, Dirk Thatcher's probably going to be in. Is there anyone else that's potentially knocking down the door for Port Adelaide at the moment?
No, I do think we just alluded to it very, very slightly earlier. Lord's a big injury for mine. Yep. I think he would have played.
Yes.
So now it's... Marshall and Dixon, and can Dixon, okay, he gets a free kick this week, but can he, his body actually stand up and deliver? Yeah, so there's a question mark there.
Absolutely. Like we did with Adelaide, mate, some big improvers for Port Adelaide this year? I've got three, and let's see if you pick, well, I know you'll pick one of them, but let's see if you get all three.
Yeah, Horn Francis for me is the big one.
Yep, tick that one off for me.
Yeah, and I could just, it sounds silly, but actually I have Rosie being an improver as well.
Okay.
That I just think there's still the uptake. I've still got nightmares of him in 18 against us and against Norwood in the grand final.
Yep.
And I just think he's just consistently just taking a bit of a step each year. I can just see him being – he does the flashy bit, but I just reckon he'll be a bit more consistent out of that. Yeah, and I like Burgoyne. I think he's a chance as well.
You got two out of my three there. Very, very good. I think Horn Francis is going to go to another level. You've swung me a little bit towards Rosie going, you know what, he's in for an improved year. I think also Ollie Wines lends to Connor Rosie actually having a good year, in that if he gets his form back, I think the pressure comes off of Rosie, and then all of a sudden he's free to almost do whatever he wants, and that's the scary part.
I think they're also a little bit, well, what do we do here? Does Rosie – so if we want to play – you know, they tried to play Ollie Wines on a wing last year. I reckon he's about as much for an AFL wingman as you or me, Pete.
Mm-hmm.
Probably being a little harsh on him.
Well, but, you're being harsh on me, mate.
Yeah, that's true. Very good point, mate. Good. Out of that, if he goes back in ball on, you know, back as the inside mid, does Horn Francis or Rosie or Butters go to the outside? When I still think that's the three dynamic they want together. Mm-hmm. So I think Port, it's going to be a question mark to see how they use people. And yeah.
Well, Rosie did sort of play up half forward, high half forward, and was very, very effective, and then obviously slotting into that midfield as well. So my other big one for Port Adelaide in big improvements is I reckon Georgiadis is going to have a reasonable year, in that Charlie Dixon is going to be a bit of a question mark at times throughout the year. Lord now going down is obviously
changes up
the opportunity a little bit, which gives him the opportunity. And Burgoyne, for me, like you, I think that he could be anything, and that's probably scary for Port Adelaide as well, in that he could turn it on, and all of a sudden they've got another string to their bow.
Again, it's how much sport's played above the ears. Georgiadis did his knee because he wasn't switched on, and that, so, but he has a lot of ability.
I know we've done our predictions before. Do we obviously see Port Adelaide making the top four?
Yep, I do personally. Yep.
And we sort of mentioned that you think Adelaide's just going to miss out on the eight, and I think that they're just going to sneak in.
Yep.
I think their brand of football is probably as exciting as anybody's when they get it going, but personnel is the big one.
Yep.
And Port Adelaide, for me, if injuries go okay for them, I don't think that there's any doubt that they could probably make the top four.
Yep.
All right, mate, let's take a very, very quick break. When we come back, we've got some hot topics.
Hi, I'm Mark Harity, and you're listening to The Game On podcast.
All right, mate, we continue with AFL Hot Topics. There's a few here that will obviously be current to now, but obviously a few that will be as the year goes on as well. But we'll start off with the concussion protocols have changed, and do you think they'll continue to change from, obviously, they're saying state leagues and local leagues are going to be 21 days. The AFL is stuck on 12 days at the moment. Do we see them going out to 21 days as of next year?
I'll put it this way, from what we've just had on air, happy 50th to Mark Harity for last weekend, and Adelaide, the state of Adelaide is just gradually recovering and returning to normal. So happy 50th, Hags.
Yes, good segue there, mate.
In terms of, it's interesting on the 21 and 12 days.
Yes.
I did check. It's not. It's 12 days staying at SANFL as well. I thought SANFL was going to 21 as well, but it's not. It's 12. Mm-hmm. How they're saying that supposedly so there's better medical bit and all that, it's got me a bit beat too. Like, I think, and it was interesting interviewing Tom Haley last year where Hales made the point that AFL players now are far more aware. They'll come and admit on a Monday, hey, hang on, I've got a headache and that, where years ago, no way in the world did you say that.
Yep.
I still think that'll happen at community level footy, and how do you prove it? It's meant to be 21 days. I agree with the sentiment, but I'm still just not sure how it's going to work. And some clubs will be more honest than others. You know, do clubs start going to watch someone else and say, hey, number 12, no way in the world wasn't he concussed.
Yep.
Yeah,
you're right.
It's great in theory. I'm just not sure it's going to work.
You stole the words out of my mouth there. The theory sounds great, but the practicality at local level is quite different to what it is at SANFL level or WAFL or VFL and AFL level. Were you surprised that the AFL failed to make some technology changes after the Adelaide incident last year?
Well, yes and no. There actually still has been some changes, mate. The field umpire's got a bit more control to request the chart. Like, people last year still trying to say that the field umpire, well, no, the field umpire did not make a mistake whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Only one person made a mistake, was the goal umpire.
Well, probably two because of the review. It should have been.
They're not allowed to call for the review. That's the thing. The review person can't say, hey, hang on, no, that's a point. So that's out of that. The field umpire now, my understanding, has got more control to run up to the goal umpire and say, no, I think we better check that. So there has been a slight tinkering there. Now, what happened last year with that? The goal umpire was just so certain it hit the post. Now, the field umpire went, oh, shit. Yeah, must have.
Mm-hmm.
It just shocked him a bit. So it sort of threw him off as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just really poor goal umpiring. And, yeah, I agree with everyone, mate, deserves a second chance, but I'm still mixed on that. He's made two clangers too. He also made one with the Josh Jenkins. So
I was going to say, it was at Adelaide Oval and at the same end as well, which is interesting.
I think he's a bit lucky to be welcomed back into the fold. Mm-hmm. I think this year he may be checking balls which go straight through the middle. I don't think he'll do that again.
Yep.
But, yeah. Let's also remember that we're all getting frustrated on so many reviews.
Yes.
Like, there was the Carlton Melbourne one where it claimed that Blake Akers, I think.
Yes.
We can all grab our hand and pretend we touched. I don't think he touched that.
Yep.
But I still don't think it's still not. You can't prove that it's flicked your finger from 60 metres away.
Well, that was going to be my
I just still think it's over the top. I'm still a fan of the goal umpire doing his job.
Yes.
But the goal umpire didn't do his job with that last year. And where the AFL are really shitty with him was it actually had a chance to go, hey, how good are we? Our technology works.
Yep.
And he didn't do it.
Yep. You sort of stole my thunder a little bit there in that two reasons. You know, they had good opportunity to obviously review it. They didn't. Or the AFL haven't done anything about it. But I do know that they're obviously investing quite heavily in ball technology that will obviously be tracked and a bit like the tennis side of things. So I think that's okay. I get that. But do we ever see a situation where the last 2 minutes of every game is taken out of the goal umpire's hands and is reviewed? Everything is reviewed? Do we see that being a reality?
Not sure. I think this has got to be a thing called common sense. The goal umpire didn't apply common sense last year. That was the thing.
Mm-hmm.
If the common sense had been used, it's not even a topic. What still is a topic for mine, I still laugh where Adelaide supporters are claiming we were robbed of the 2 points, or 4 points. What a load of crap. The ball goes back to the middle. There was a minute 18 to go. And who knows what would have
exactly happened. Exactly right. And we've talked previously that there were some other games during the year that they probably...
Exactly.
missed the mark on. But anyway, very interested with that one there in that, they haven't really made too many changes to the technology side of things. But we all know that it's a work in progress. Umpiring already in the opening round, and I'm sure in round one is going to be the same, is that there are a lot of reviews this week or last week, and there will be a lot more reviews this week because obviously we've got more games.
Yeah.
Do we see that being as a good thing or a bad thing? Because, again,
you've got umpires there
yeah, to do their job.
To do the job, exactly. And there were some last week where you go, what the hell are you reviewing that? That is so obvious. And so they're gun shy after the mistake last year. So I get that, but, geez, you just do your job and umpire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do we see world sport in general? I mean, cricket's probably a classic example where there's now more reviews than ever.
Well, in cricket too, for mine, it used to be if you were well forward, you got benefit of the doubt. Now, that's gone with under DRS with this ball tracking. Now, it was really interesting in the test match, which has just happened.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, Alex Carey did review. I thought at the time, no, that's going to be umpire's call. I'm not giving that out. Mm-hmm. I reckon that's going to be umpire's call. Well, luckily it then showed.
Yes.
And then Marsh, when Marsh was given out, we're all going straight, well, that's not out.
Yep.
And yet the ball tracking almost had the ball changing direction to click the leg stump. Yeah. So I still agree with Kerry O'Keefe. It's a drugged out uni student going, yeah, there, man, close enough, man.
I feel like the AFL arcs a little bit in that frame of mind at the moment. Yes. But anyway, we'll leave that one alone. We'll move on. Class action from some older players regarding some racial vilification to go ahead. We know that what happened back in the day, we're in a totally different era. It did happen. We can't deny it. We can't say that it didn't happen.
Of course we can't. But it's still he say, she say. Now you deny, no, I didn't say that. How are you going to prove that? Like, I'm sorry.
Yep.
You're going to bring that up. Why is it being brought up now, not donkeys years ago? For mine, that's still, move on.
We will move on, but I'm just interested that it's obviously something that is going to go ahead. And
I've got to be careful.
Yeah. No. And again, allegedly these things have been said. We sort of know that
we know they happen. Don't dare get me wrong there, but I'm still saying, hang on, you can guarantee the person, well, I didn't say that.
Yes.
Well, how are you going to prove it? Come on.
No, feckle. Come on. Player movements already being discussed. We haven't really hit the start of the season. What are your thoughts on that? Because for me, it's just like we never used to talk about these things until sort of round 18, 19. Now it's like round one and all of a sudden Hugo Hagen and Smith and everybody and Hawthorn have got this big war chest that they're going to basically buy every player under the sun and everything else. What are your thoughts on it being discussed this early in the season? Because it then puts a lot of pressure on players and clubs to follow through.
I think the problem is because there are so many in the footy landscape that they come up with things to talk about.
You're talking
about
in the media landscape?
Yeah, in the sport media footy landscape. Like, again, people coming back with and I'm using Kane Corns the example here, that don't dare think he actually thinks everything he said is aimed to get clicks. He's doing his job there.
Absolutely.
Doesn't mean it is actually what he really thinks.
Well, I'm glad you sort of said that because in our next episode later on this week, our first opening remarks is actually from Rowie, and he pretty much says the same thing, that he's got to do his job. He gets to sit behind a microphone, a bit like what we're doing. We have our opinions, so we're part of that landscape as well. So. Yeah. It's interesting that it's already started for round one. All right, we'll move on. Is the AFL a chance to dominate the sporting landscape with more games in the future? Considering, and I've thrown this one in because obviously cricketing spectators games were played in three-quarters empty stadiums. Yeah. Does the AFL jump on this considering they do want it 366 days a year, mate?
Yeah, I'm probably more that I think they may spread their games out more where they don't want games to clash as much.
Mm-hmm.
Like traditionally there's at least the two games on Saturday night, three on the Saturday arvo. Mm-hmm. Will that start earlier? Yep. Will there be a Monday night? I know it hasn't worked before, but does that become like America?
It's a big thing.
The TV time slot on all that. So I do think that's a chance to happen.
All right, it sort of leads me into my next point. We did tease it in the end of last...
Yes, go for it, mate.
Yep. Last episode in maybe a potential new system for the AFL fixture going forward in a true home and away format. Now, the only thing that doesn't make sense with this format is you're probably getting two less games a weekend for the majority of the season. In that, I have come up with a system that allows for a true home and away system that, you know, has teams like your Richmonds, your Collingwoods, your Essendons, and your big Carltons and your big VFL teams travelling on a every second week basis, a bit like the old days.
Yeah, possibly.
So here's what I've got. Let's run through it. I've got a proposed bracket system in that bracket A, teams as follow is Adelaide, Sydney, Brisbane, West Coast, Collingwood, Essendon, Geelong, Hawthorn, St Kilda, and a bye. In bracket B, I have Port Adelaide, GWS, Gold Coast, Fremantle, Carlton, Richmond, North Melbourne, / Tassie, but we'll talk about that one in obviously more detail, Melbourne and the Western Bulldogs. Now, by having two brackets like that where you do split up, obviously, the two teams in South Australia, Sydney,
yeah, it's been
Brisbane.
Spoken about two conferences. Yeah. Yep.
So what this does is this allows, obviously, for two conferences to be played, and obviously the teams in bracket A play each other twice, the teams in bracket B play each other twice. Perfect, no problem. North Melbourne, obviously, I've put down as a merging team with Tasmania. We all know that where that is at the moment could be anybody's guess. Obviously, with a 19th team coming in, creates a little bit of an issue. Having a bye in each bracket does allow for time off for these players. It gives them, obviously, a bye, which I think is important considering the length of the season in general. By having this two-bracketed system, it does allow you to do that. Now, here's what I'm sort of proposing or can be added in to give you those extra games. You've got additional rounds to be considered. Obviously, opening round, which has come in this year. You've then got Anzac round, where all teams would be playing each other. You've got gather round, where all teams, once again, would be playing each other. So you're sort of playing your bracket, but you're also playing outside your bracket as well. You then obviously got your rivalry rounds. Very, very important for the AFL to have those rivalry rounds. So that's just a start on that part of it and how the crossover in your division or your bracket would cross over with the other bracket. And there's obviously some more games like the Ron Barassi round, you know, international round, women's round, charity round, whatever you could make up.
Worship Bob Newell round,
There you go. In doing that would obviously give you the two conference systems, two nine games played obviously throughout the year. Then my change, and again, I'm only spitballing here, and this is something that I've gone through a little bit over the last probably 18 months and just sort of wrote down different ideas from different people, different ideas of my own, in that the final system then changes because of this bracket system. Your first week of the finals is a wild card round, which we've all sort of said, yeah, it has some merit. Maybe. I sort of get it. But because you would be crossing over your bracket A and bracket Bs, it obviously then becomes a little bit interesting as to which teams in form from which bracket and so on and so on. So there's an additional round there. Obviously, then week two then becomes the first qualifying final, the first seeds versus the fourth, so on and so on. From there, now here's where it changes in your preliminary final, and I know that we've talked and everybody's talking about maybe three grand finals. I'm actually proposing that there's a two preliminary final matches. In some cases it could be two interstate teams in a home and away style format, and the aggregate scores over those two games is what actually determines your winner. And then obviously we're not going to get away from the MCG grand final until 2059. So that still becomes a one-game grand final, but a two-game preliminary final where an interstate team does get the opportunity of playing one home and one away.
Yeah, I see that. I still like the bit of of the grand final becoming best of three.
Yep.
So I can see either way there. I'd like to go back. Why not go the season one or two more weeks and just have only one, you only get one preseason game. Mm-hmm. That's it, and then play round one.
Well, the system that I've sort of proposed a little bit takes away from pre-season altogether. Yeah. Yeah, so you are.
I don't mind getting rid of that either.
You organise your practice games. You do what you want to do as a club, whether it be internal trials.
Yeah, legally it's not quite as easy as that. Yep. So I don't think that can happen, but I'd go, right, you're only allowed one or it's none.
Yeah.
No one plays there.
I'd prefer none. And as I said, in this case and in this type of scenario that I'm sort of proposing a little bit is that it is a conference system where you split up, obviously, the eight interstate clubs, the 10 Melbourne clubs.
Yep.
And then what happens is, obviously, each weekend you got a true home and away system where there is clubs that will be travelling, and you schedule the draw so that way if Adelaide are playing home in week one, Port Adelaide are playing away against all of that.
Yep.
So my big three proposals are a bracket system, which obviously splits that up with a bye included. The crossover in bracket games is special rounds as Anzac rounds, rivalry round, gather round, opening round, Barassi round, international round, et cetera, et cetera. And then my big one is the finals, is that you give an extra finals, an extra basically two finals games or two finals weeks where you have the the wild card round where you are swapping over the brackets against each other for that seventh and eighth spot, and also the preliminary final in two finals rather than one because of the three grand finals. So there's a little bit of meat there to work with. Again, it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea. I'm just trying to sort of cover all bases in that I know we can't get away from the MCG for the next 40 years or whatever it is, but the sort of that home and away. And then with that being a home preliminary final, you know, getting tickets to some of those games is obviously very, very hard in that if you do happen to get a Carlton or a Collingwood playing each other, obviously it's going to be played at the MCG. Game one, Collingwood get 75% of the ticket allocation, 25% goes to Carlton, and then in the reverse game it's completely the opposite.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably a fair way.
It is fairer in the moment.
It is at the moment. And again, this is all based on that we have a very inequitable system as it is. This is somewhat trying to bring that into line to allow that to happen. Anyway, they're just my thoughts.
Yeah.
Please comment. We'll put it up on our socials. Please comment if you've got any other ideas on that, because, as I said, I've tried to become as fair and equitable as possible, and the only way to do that is to play 36 weeks where everybody plays each other. Yeah. But we're not going to have that happen.
No.
We're not going to have that
happen. I know, but even if you go one more, each time you go, like, gather around and all that, it does make it slightly fairer. Mm-hmm. And that overall.
Yes.
Amazingly, the Victorian clubs complain about another week's travel, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah,
but out of that, if you add another one or two rounds on,
yes,
it does make it fairer the more we go.
It sort of balances itself up, which is sort of what I'm proposing to a certain degree.
Yep.
Obviously, the finals component in there. So please, by all means, comment. All right, let's get on to this week's games very, very quickly, mate. Carlton v Richmond.
I'll go Carlton.
I will go Carlton as well. We've got Collingwood v Sydney.
Again, if in doubt, I'll go the home side. I'm going to go Collingwood, but I do give Sydney a distinct chance.
I think Collingwood are going to bounce back back pretty well, because that was very un-Collingwood-like. Essendon and Hawthorn.
I'll go Essendon. I just think Hawthorn Day being out for them is vital.
I think injuries
down the back.
Yeah,
I just see Wright and maybe, you know, who knows what planet Stringer's going to be on.
Mm-hmm.
He's always a wait and see on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'll go Essendon.
I'll go Essendon as well. I think Hawthorn just with a few too many injuries there at the moment. GWS North Melbourne.
I'll go GWS.
I can't argue with you there, mate. GWS as well. Geelong and St Kilda. This one's an interesting one for me.
Real toss of the coin. Having gone past Cadinia Park yesterday, actually, having a quick glimpse at the new development, it does look pretty impressive.
The old Joel Selwood stands.
Yeah. I'll go Geelong in their opening to get over the line.
I agree. Geelong are one of those, and St Kilda are one of those teams at the moment you just have a big question mark over. But yeah, I think Geelong at home, first game at home, they're going to be up and about. Gold Coast v Adelaide.
Gold Coast. I'm going to go Gold Coast over 39. I'm going to have a go at that.
Bet responsibly.
Yep.
I think it's going to be close, but I reckon Gold Coast as well. It pains me to say. Melbourne v. the Bulldogs.
I'm going to go still on my purely the reason I'm going for Melbourne, I'm going on my, you know, if I've got to go the whole way, having a real crack that Adelaide have been disadvantaged, well, surely the Dogs are disadvantaged, so I'm going to go the D's.
I'm going to go to the D's to bounce back a little bit as well, but there's still too many question marks there. But there's just as many question marks with the Bulldogs.
Oh, yeah, very
because
much so.
You've got the Bulldogs Beverage versus Frio Longmuir story that just continues to bubble on in the background a little bit. There's been changes in departments of people moving around the Bulldogs to keep people away from each other.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite bizarre.
That's not as clear cut as it is as well. And these are the two clubs that have probably got the biggest question mark off field playing each other in round one.
Disarray one versus disarray two.
It's going to be an interesting, see how that one plays out. Port Adelaide v West Coast.
Yeah, I'll go Port to beat the Bight.
Fair call. And the Dockers v the Lions.
I'm going to go the Lions to rebound.
I'm going to go the Lions as well, mate. So, yeah, not too many changes there. Game of the round for you?
Collingwood-Sydney.
Yeah, mine from just a purely almost car accident type point of view is I've got two. Definitely the Melbourne Western Bulldogs one that we were just talking about. But probably the biggest one for me is probably Geelong and St. Kilda.
Yeah, that's the most probably iffy one.
Putting money on it, I don't know which way I'm going to go. That's really what it gets down to. So.
Yep.
All right, mate, we're going to wrap things up. A huge episode on our AFL-only podcast. Our regular podcast will drop on Saturday, as per usual, where we talk about everything sport, including cricket, the SNFL, some tennis, some soccer, and obviously all our regular segments. We didn't have a guest this week, so we thought we'd chuck in this podcast as a bit of a bonus, and that we didn't give the opening round too much last week because really the AFL side of things has really got going in the
cranked up from there.
Exactly. Yeah. So as per usual, we promise to do better. We'll see you on our next episode.
In this crazy world we live in, we all need the distraction. Enjoying the show? Like, rate, and subscribe. Hook up and connect with us on social media at SportsCastSA. We'll see you next time on Game On.